Hello, everyone, and welcome to Serious Sounds Radio, where you'll find the best information about computer-based music production. I'm your host, Soup, and this is episode number one. On today's episode, we're going to cover some site and industry news, choice topics from the forums, my topic of the week, which is introduction to music production. We're going to go over a little NAMM roundup, and then we'll finish out with artists for the week. But first, why don't I explain exactly what is Serious Sounds Radio, since this is our inaugural broadcast.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Were you serious?
You're taking it so seriously. It's not without its element of humor.
SeriousSounds.net is an online music production community focused around electronic music and computer-based music production. We have several different sections to our site. Our main section is our forums, where our community of users talk and discuss about electronic music production. You can go in there, share your work, talk about different techniques for music production, and overall get along with other like-minded individuals about music production in general. We also have our radio show, in addition to this podcast that I'm starting. We also have Sundays live DJ mixes on Shoutcast server. Head on over to SeriousSounds.net if you want to check that out. We also have a live chat on Sundays while the radio DJs mix. Anyone can participate in that and chat with each other, and even chat with the DJs live while they're talking. So if you're interested, head on over to serious-sounds.net, sign up for our user community. We'd love to hear you and see you over there. So this podcast, the basic format, is going to be every other week. I'm going to start out with a little introduction about the community news and other sorts of things that are happening. I'm going to move on to industry news and talk about different gear and music and software releases that are happening on the net that would be interesting to people who are computer-based musicians. And then I'm going to move on to talking about forum topics. Topics that I pulled from our discussion boards that I thought were interesting and relevant to music production. I'm going to talk about the topic of the week, go into reader emails, and then I'll have a featured artist of the week from our community. So on to news. So for this week, for the news section, there's some great articles that are kind of circling around the net that I thought were pretty interesting and I think people would like to hear about. First, we got a new introduction of Pro Tools, which was announced. The popular Digia 002 that's been around for a few years now is going to be succeeded by the 003 in both a control surface and a wrapped version. It has gotten some pretty good attention on the net recently. The new release basically updates the control surface from Digia's midline range of Pro Tools, which comes with Pro Tools LE. But this new interface, which comes in white as compared to the graphite black that they had before, has some more interface controls, better audio in outports, and some other sort of fun little features. Pricing on this is apparently going to be about $2,500, which I think is about the same price as the 002 Pro Tools rack, which is out there. I would suspect that there's some sort of upgrade deal coming along with this as well, but there's no word on that yet. I'll try to keep you guys updated as soon as I hear more news about that. Next up in news, we have the successor to Logic 7 on the Mac. Now, rumors kind of are going around on this is that there will be no Logic 8, that Apple is actually working on developing a new sort of audio program for the Mac, and nobody knows exactly what this is. Over at Create Digital Music, they say, quote, "Rumors have swirled about Apple's flagship music and audio software since the company first absorbed eMagic. In the absence of Logic update, the rumors are back. This time to come from an unusual source, a former eMagic employee." An excited reader says, "There will only be no Logic 8. The new application will have new name. It's been worked on for about 5 years. And we quote, the Pro Tools killer. This new software program will take advantage of the new operating system, 10.5, which is supposed to come out within the next 4 to 6 months. and might have a hardware touchscreen display. Now, there's no hard evidence about this thing online, but there's also some other interesting info that's kind of surfaced. Someone picked up that there's been some recent patent filings at the U.S. Patent Office that looks like Apple is working on a significant new music software or hardware interface. No one's really sure exactly what this is, but it looks like it's touchscreen hardware, and I would suspect that if these rumors are true, these are somehow related to each other. The patents are for these, the following sorts of items: a frameless musical keyboard, evaluating and correcting rhythm audio data, touch-sensitive electronic apparatus for media applications, providing synchronized audio for multiple devices, a method and apparatus for stimulating mechanical keyboard action, a method and apparatus for evaluating correcting rhythm and audio data, and there's a few more in there that which aren't quite as interesting. There seems to be Apple evidence of touchscreen, which Apple has probably been working on for a long time, and a lot of people have actually been looking for in Apple hardware products. There's no touchscreen laptop, and a lot of people think that's probably going to be a logical next step for many Apple hardwares. But what exactly does a frameless music keyboard mean? Could this be some sort of multi-touch interface? Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see what Apple comes out with. A few weeks ago, we had a big release. I'm sure a lot of people on the boards will be excited about this one. Fruity Loops 7, or FL Studio 7, was released. A lot of people on the Serious Sounds forums use this software, so I'm sure you guys are pretty excited about this. There's a lot of updates to this software. One of the big things is that it has a really great new Para EQ added to it. There's a lot of other different updates to it as well. Vista support is included in this version, and apparently there's also multi-core processor support, which means if you guys out there are running dual-core processors, you'll be able to have a better performance with your dual-core processor than it, with other software. Actually, not a lot of stuff right now is able to utilize dual-core software, and FL Studio seems to be one of the few out there who can actually do it. Vista support is also pretty big. Not too many other software platforms currently have Vista. I believe Sonar is one of the few that has official Vista support as of right now. There also were some reports with this new FL7 upgrade that some of your old projects may or may not work with it. I'm not sure exactly what is that with this new upgrade that might be breaking some project files, but double check online if you are a user of FL Studio, especially if you paid for it, definitely worth upgrading. You get that free upgrade with it. So head on over to ImageLine or flstudio.com and download the latest update. And last for kind of news this week, nothing really big, but something I thought was kind of interesting is Papercraft synthesizers. SDIY cut synthesizer, do it yourself. Someone posted a little project, which are classic little analog synthesizers online, that you print out on a piece of paper, cut them up, and you fold them into the shape of the synth. They're actually very, very cool. If you want to check those out, head on over to the website. The link is posted in the podcast here. Print up some classic synthesizers, since I know you probably can't afford them like I can. Nobody has $3,000 to drop on a classic modular synth, so this is probably the best thing you can get. Discussion posts from the SiriusSounds.net's boards that I thought were pretty interesting. I'll do this every time on every episode, pull some of the most interesting discussions that are currently happening on the boards. Our first topic this week is strengths and weaknesses. Nelm Z posts, just interested to see what you're best and worst at. I'm worst at creating my own bass sounds. I need all the help I can get in this area. Even though there are tutorials on SS, I'm still terrible. When I make a bass sound and I don't sound as good as the rest of the track, it completely ruins it. On the other hand, I've been told that I'm good at adding lots of energy to my tracks. So what's yours? Now, personally, I think probably my biggest strength is my synth programming skills. I think I'm pretty good at programming little skills and little sounds into my mixes. My worst is overall just producing dance music. I am horrible at producing dance music for whatever reason it is. And consequently, whenever I try to make a dance song, it just sounds absolutely horrid. One of our members replies, Listexic, I'd have to say the biggest strength is creating an overall sonic palette that is interesting and works. My biggest weakness is mixing. Though my last few mixes have shown great improvement, I just am terrible at finishing a song. I make lots of great sounding little fragments, but never make it into a full composition. Another member on the board, Blue Juice, states, I'm good at everything to do with music. Way to go, Blue. His weakness is he's easily distracted. So, okay, he might be all that great at music, but apparently he can't ever get anything finished. That's the same with me. One of my biggest problems is that it takes me forever to write a song. It's not surprising for me to go 2 to 3 months just to write a song because I am that slow. Now, does it make my songs better? I don't know. We'll see. But I would love to learn how to make songs a little bit quicker. Maybe not pump it out in a day, but not have to go 2 to 3 months in between songs. And last reply that I thought was interesting on here was from Chi on the boards. He has some great synths and programming skills, but his tracks just sometimes feel empty. He needs that extra little effects noise or something there to make it worthwhile, fill it out, and really give it that sparkle. One of our other topics that I pulled from the boards this week, what is your favorite BPM? That's beats per minute. So what do you like to produce at the most? Personally, I don't know what I like to produce at the most. I think most of my works end up being around 118 to 120 range, simply because I mostly produce down-tempo sorts of tracks. A lot of people replied with all sorts of different topics on the thing. I think a lot of these tempos will be kind of restricted to what you're talking about, but one post I thought was really interesting in here was by DJ Stylus. Did anyone know the reason most Go is written around 143 beats per minute? This is actually the frequency your brain alpha waves operate at. Look up binaural brain frequencies, and it's really great. So that's kind of an interesting little topic that I found in that post, and I'll post a link to it in the show notes here of a Wikipedia post for that. Kind of interesting. Some other posts that I thought were interesting in this thread by Astral Forces. At the moment, I'm mostly producing trance stuff, which is always 140 beats per minute for me. Never a beat faster or never a beat slower. I've done a few ambient and chill-out pieces as well in the range, which are 80 to 120 beats per minute, but I've never gone higher than 140. So that's pretty interesting. He produces at exactly 140 beats per minute. And actually, when you look at most beats per minute, I find it kind of interesting, and a lot of artists do, so they just round up. So when you're producing a lot of work, people will do 120, 125, 130, 135, and so forth. Because why do that 133 range? Is there really any audible difference between 133 and 135? So everybody just kind of rounds up to a whole number, which is kind of interesting. Last reply in this thread that I thought was interesting was by Cozy. He produces at 138 because it was the first beat per minute that he effectively mixed at when he got his first mix equipment. So that's pretty interesting as well. Now for our last topic of the week, comes from DJ Tangent on the boards, and it's music on another planet. He writes, I've always wondered if aliens exist or are making music on another planet. I mean, what frequency range do they hear? So do they work at the same timing signatures as we do? Can you imagine what a beat would actually mean to them? They probably have a little tiny box with voice commands that is like making 8 Mach quads. What beat per minute would they like to use? 8,000th? Would that be fast or slow? So that's kind of an interesting topic. And it's actually, you know, if you think about it for a second, kind of interesting to think about. A lot of people talk about music as the universal language. And, you know, every culture on Earth has music of some form or another. And many ways, that's a lot of ways that we can communicate to each other. So it's kind of interesting to think about, if there's life out there, do they listen to music? And what does music mean to them? Is it the same as it is to us? Would it sound the same? Would it still sound pleasant to us? Who knows? If you want to reply to that thread, head on over to the boards. Try to get the discussion going on that thread a lot. We'll be right back. week's topic, what I'm going to talk about is choosing software. I think that's kind of the appropriate topic to get this whole Serious Sounds Radio podcast going. It's the logical step where most people out there who's listening, if they haven't started producing already, where they're going to get started on going. So for this episode, I'm not going to talk a lot about hardware, simply because just about any computer these days will get you going with what you need to do. But instead, what I'm going to talk about is choosing software, perhaps how you want to look for your first software, and trying to find a software that fits you as an artist and as a person. I myself am actually in the process of looking for software. I actually have stopped producing on the computer for a couple of years ago, and I was doing all hardware music production. And I'm now looking to get back into it. So I'm kind of in the same mode as some people out there. I'm shopping around trying to find what's right for me. When I started way back on a really, really old computer. It was a Pentium 3 450 megahertz computer. It was ancient. And surprisingly, I was able to get some pretty good music out of there. So what I was using at the time was Fruity Loops, before it was called FL Studio nowadays. And I was using version 2.5 and 3.0, which were actually pretty full-featured at the time. I actually started even earlier on that, some real sample-based software, but I'm not going to get into that. And later, Fruity Loops worked great for me, and I know a lot of people on the message boards really like Fruity Loops, or FL Studio. It has a great interface, great piano roll sorts of design and everything. And then later I moved on to a different type of program, which is called a tracker, which is slightly different than Fruity Loops and most other programs, which are sequencers. In a tracker, when you're producing the music goes through the song vertically from top to bottom rather than left to right. Sounds kind of counterintuitive, but trackers were actually some of the first software programs that were out there on the net. I moved to a program called Buzz Tracker, which is kind of a modular studio, which means you can basically connect anything to anything within the software environment and create your sounds. And for whatever reason, the tracker interface just clicked with me more than the FL Studio interface, the sequencer interface. So I ended up using a tracker for a long, long time. Now, I find myself, I'm on a Mac. I don't use a PC anymore. And there's just not very many trackers out there for the Mac. There's one, there's a very good one out there called Renoise, which is kind of a reintroduction of a classic Fast Tracker 2 tracker, which was one of the most popular trackers in the early 90s. And so I'm kind of working around different types of studios and seeing what's best for me. So basically, what I'm kind of going to do here is kind of just introduce some of the basic, more popular software studio environments out there, what people can kind of be looking for, how I'm looking for music software, and so forth. So basically, as a quick run-up, as what are some of the more popular environments out there that people are producing in? And for this, I'm going to focus primarily on computer software studios, which means you can do everything right in the computer on the software. You have your classic big three, I would like to say, programs which professional studios use, Pro Tools, Cubase, Pro Logic. Those aren't software environments like I'm going to focus on here. Yes, you can produce completely in the computer with those, but they have a lot of other features and are really more towards using MIDI tools and hardware and so forth and recording. So starting out basically just with the PC, one of the most popular ones today, like I mentioned before, is FL Studio. FL Studio is created by a company called ImageLine. And it's pretty much the principal software studio being used today. It has just about everything you need included right in the package. And it has a really fantastic interface. It's really beautifully done. Personally, I'm not really into the beautiful interfaces, but a lot of people are because they're visual sorts of people. So the interface on that really clicks with a lot of people. It's got a nice dark interface, which is easy on the eyes when you're looking at the screen. Piano roll is really, really nice, high contrast. A lot of people love the piano roll, and it comes with a lot of software instruments. Probably one of the best things about FL Studio, in my opinion, is the price. You can pick up a full-featured studio, which comes with a lot of great software instruments in it, plus all the other instruments you could possibly, you know, download on the internet will work on there, VST plugins, for about $150, which is really a good deal. You're not going to find much else out there in the $150 range. Up in price a little bit, one of the more popular ones that's kind of emerged in the past couple of years is called Traction. Now, Traction is, again, kind of like FL Studio, where it's all in one software package. It's ballpark right around that $150 range. It doesn't come quite with as many doesn't come with quite as many plugins, per se, but it it again has a lot to do with what you can work with right out of the package. Now, Traction has a different interface, as you might expect, than FL Studio. What Traction has, it's called a single screen interface, and that means when you open the program, everything opens into a full screen mode, and everything you need is in one window, in one screen right there in front of you. Other sorts of programs like FL Studio, they might have tabs or other sorts of windows that open within the program when you're working with stuff, especially plugins and effects. Traction is not like that. That has a much different interface. The GUI, or the graphics effects on that one, are a lot flatter. They're not quite as impressive as FL Studio. A lot of people prefer that sort of flatter interface. And Traction has a quasi sort of modular interface style. Now, a couple other popular programs out there, we're going to move up in the price range quite a bit. There's some other smaller ones that people might want to check out. Cakewalk Project 5, that's a very popular software-based studio. One of the advantages of that is that it works very well with patterns. And the big strength of Cakewalk Project 5 is that you can take one pattern that you composed on one track that has a synthesizer assigned to it and just drag that pattern to another track and it'll automatically play for the next track. So if you wanted to try different sorts of synthesizers on different tracks and mix everything up, it's very easy to do that in Project 5. Another one that I think doesn't get a lot of attention that it probably should is Arturia Storm. This one's extremely similar to FL Studio, different interface, but a lot of the same features. And these are all in the basic, let's say $200 and less price range, essentially. Now we have some of the bigger software studio environments out there. One of the perhaps biggest one is Reason. This is by Propellerhead Software. And what Reason is, it's not really a software studio per se, but what it is a virtual racks of synthesizers. It mimics hardware synthesizers very, very well. So what you do in this software studio, you have your racks of synthesizers and effects set up, and you basically plug them into each other. You can literally turn the software around and look, go behind these racks of synths, plug things and route things, and it works very, very well, I think, for electronic music. Now, it's not necessarily the best sort of software for if you want to do recording or other sorts of stuff, but because it's software-based and most of the stuff is effects and synths and samplers, it is very good for electronic music. One of the biggest downfalls, however, with Reason is that it doesn't load any plugins at all. So it doesn't load any VST plugins or anything else on the Mac. It won't load AU plugins or anything like that. It only works with what it comes with. So you have some very good synths in there, a lot of samplers, and of course a sequencer and effects. And it actually comes with a very good mastering studio as well, which is a lot of people don't really get that part. So, but the strength of that, on the other hand, is that the programs are very, very efficient. You don't have to worry about any problems with plugins that you might run into with other platforms. Occasionally, especially if you're using freeware plugins, you might run into that one rogue plugin who's going to make your system crash or your CPU cycles or has a memory leak or something like that. And then you're going to find out, oh gosh, why is my studio work not working? Or it could corrupt the file. Who knows? Reason, that's the advantage and disadvantage of Reason. Now, Reason is much more expensive. I think it retails for $400 US. You can probably get it online if you purchase it for, let's say, $350. Still, it's pretty expensive. And the interface is not for everyone, especially if you've never done music production before. Jumping right into that hardware style interface might not click with you. And so, but I would recommend a lot of people checking that one out. Another big criticism that a lot of people have with Reason that I personally don't have is they say it changes the character of the sound. So if you make something, great synth line, let's say, for example, and you're listening to it back, it sounds one way. But apparently, people claim once you render it to an MP3 file or a WAV file, the mixdown and algorithm within Reason changes that sound somehow. I've heard that it's around the 300 kilohertz range that the mixer does something funky. I personally have never really noticed that problem on music that I've heard in Reason. I've never been able to hear a song and be, oop, I know that's Reason. That's not some other software. That's Reason right there. So I've never had that problem. So don't let that necessarily detract you. Those are some of the basic, most popular commercial software studios that are kind of out there right now. There's plenty of other ones out there being produced by smaller manufacturers. I encourage everybody to look them out, check them out. What I'm going to focus on now a little bit is kind of the off-beaten path, some of the freeware ones, which I encourage you to check out, and also the trackers. So there's three very, very popular trackers that are out there right now. Two of them are free. One is commercial, but it's actually pretty cheap. The first one, I actually mentioned two of these earlier. Renoise is the first one. That's commercial. It's about $50 US, which is not bad at all. And it essentially has that kind of classic tracker interface, which means information scrolls vertically top to bottom. Your notes are inputted numerically. So, for example, you'll input C3, B4, et cetera, et cetera. And these are actually notes that correspond to a keyboard. And the numbering system, when you input numbers or values, say for an effects knob return or something like that, it's based on a hexadecimal numbering system, which means it's 16-based, not 10 like your classic numbering system that you're used to counting to. And it has 32 tracks. It's very, very good from what I hear. A lot of people swear by it, especially the classic tracker users. Now, in terms of features, it doesn't really have anything less or more than the other software studios out there. Essentially, it does everything all the other ones do as well. It just does them slightly different because it's a tracker. Now, other two modular studios, these are both free, are Buzz, or Buzz Machines, and Cycle. Now, I'm first going to talk about Buzz a little bit. Buzz started several years back. It's a free modular tracker studio. It was designed to be kind of a next-generation tracker. It's 100% free, but it has a slight learning curve to it simply because it's modular and it has a tracker sort of interface, which are two sort of complicated things that some people have trouble with to begin with. Now, Buzz has kind of a history behind it. Back in 2001, the source code was lost by the developer. And ironically enough, Buzz had such a user-based community that it's kind of still flourished in spite of that. So Buzz is modular. That means you can put an infinite number of effects on a synth, if your computer can handle it, and you can add an infinite number of tracks in your production work. Now, Buzz has this fantastic user community behind it, with developers and users and everything. Buzz has its own sort of plugins. It can also load VST and DXI instruments on Windows. It's Windows only, but it has these Buzz plugs, or Buzz plugins, and there's over 500 or 600 of these things developed out there, which is actually just a huge number. And a lot of these Buzz plugins are very, very good. And on top of that, Buzz has been continued to kind of been hacked by the community over the years. So additional features have been added onto it through users hacking or creating shells around the program, which have kind of supplemented for the lack of development in it. The most popular one of these is called Overloader, and it comes with most Buzz installation packages. Overloader adds all sorts of additional features like export to MP3, multi-track recording, exporting, and different things like that. It also adds ASI support, which I don't believe the original Buzz had. And if you're on a very, very tight budget, and if you're kind of a computer geek, I totally recommend checking it out. It's free. It has pretty much all the tools you need right there to get using. I would highly recommend using a MIDI controller or a keyboard with Buzz, simply because the tracker interface can be a little intimidating to have to type in the keynotes on your keyboard. Another popular software that I'm going to talk about is called Cycle. Now, Cycle was originally developed by a developer called Argaroo, and it was supposed to be a successor to Buzz after the code was lost. So in many respects, Cycle looks and acts a lot like Buzz. It's modular. You connect and drag machines and synthesizers and effects pretty much the same way. The way it does its sequencing and the actual tracker interface is slightly different, more classic tracker looking than Buzz was. With development, Argaroo left that project and went on to another project called Audix, which might become free, actually, within the next few months. And its development has continued with some other party developers. Now, the difference between Cycle and Buzz are slight. On their core, the packages are pretty much the same. After from that, it gets to be a little bit differences, and those little differences might be what sway you from one package to the other. Now, Cycle has a much smaller plugin database. It has its own plugins. It doesn't have quite as many, but it loads VST. So for a lot of people, that might not be a problem. It also has a little bit fancier interface, and as I mentioned before, the sequencing is slightly different on it. So that could be a make or break in some respects for people. So what I recommend people who are interested in trying that kind of modular or tracker interface, download both of those programs and see which one clicks with you better. Because you never know which one might be the best one for you. Now, my own journey trying to find new software has actually been kind of a rocky one. As I kind of mentioned before, I'm on a Mac now. And to be honest, that limits a lot of my choices. Macs are actually very, very good for audio production, but the problem is it's mostly commercial software, and of that commercial software, it's all very, very expensive. The most classic example is ProLogic, which is developed by Apple, $1,000 for the premium package of that. That's just something I cannot afford. There's a few other studios out there that are similar to that. Digital Performer, there's a stripped down version of Pro Logic, there's Pro Tools. But to be honest, those are not things that I want or need. Those are not software studios exactly what I'm looking for. So what I've kind of narrowed my purchase down, I've gone around on the internet, I've done a lot of research, trying to find out what software studio packages are out there for the Mac. PC, you guys got a ton. There's a bazillion more smaller developers in addition to the ones I just mentioned earlier that you guys can look at. Head over to the Serious Sounds forums. We got threads about these things. I put up a huge software and sequencer list on there that talks all about different sorts of sequencer packages that you may have never heard of before. When I was shopping for them, I've been looking all over online trying to find the best deal or what would be the best fit for me. It's been a pretty hard process, and I've not made a decision yet. I've kind of narrowed my decision down to three options, which seem to be the only real software studio packages available for the Mac. And that is Renoise, because that's only $50. Reason, because it's all-inclusive studio. And Traction. Now, for me, none of these are actually the perfect solution. And here's why. Reason is great. It's a little expensive, though, and it doesn't load any plugins, so I'm a little concerned about that. Also has a slightly different interface than probably what I'm used to. It's a little bit different than a classic sequencer and a tracker. So that's something I need to be aware of. Traction is another one of my considerations. Traction 3, the new version, is coming out within the next month or two. And it comes with actually a great package. For $150, you can get the basic core package. Or for $300, they have a nice bundled software package. Now, my problem with Traction, however, is that it's twofold. One, it only loads VST plugins for the Mac. Now, if you're a Windows user, that is not a problem at all. VST plugins are the plugin of choice for Windows users. For Mac, however, VST plugins are not that great. But yeah, there's commercial ones out there, and those run fine. But they're expensive. And there's not a lot of freeware plugins out there. Now, the package that comes with Traction, the plugins don't really interest me all that much. And again, I tried Traction in the past on Windows, and it didn't exactly click with me. So that leaves me with my third choice of Renoise. Now, Renoise actually looks like it might be a great package for me. I worked well with the tracker interface on Buzz. That really clicked with me. And it's one of the few trackers, if not the only tracker, that works on Mac. Now, the problem with Renoise, same as with Traction, is that it only loads VST plugins. And that's kind of a concern for me. But the one benefit that it has is that it's a lot cheaper to begin with, so I might be able to afford more of those commercial plugins if I decide to go that route. So what I'm going to basically leave you guys here with is some advice, especially for those out there looking to get their new software packages. Try to go and get as much advice on software as you can. You know, hit up message boards all over the place. Hit up Serious Sounds. Hit up another great forum is KVR, their host plugin directory, and a lot of people talk on there about different stuff. Get people's opinions on the software that's out there. But, word of warning, don't strictly rely on those opinions on the first decision of your software. Software is kind of like any other piece of clothing that you might wear. It has to fit your personality and it has to fit you correctly for it to work well. Don't just rely on opinions and go out and purchase something. Demo something as if you can at all possible and find out and spend probably, I would say, at least a month with each piece of software before you make a decision. Now, you might think that's kind of a long time, but it's probably going to take you at least a week or 2 weeks to really get a handle of what the software is doing. And then you want to spend a couple weeks really digging into it to find out if it's the right fit for you. The worst thing you want to do is go out and spend $150, $200, $300 and find out in 2 months that you're just not making good music with it because something doesn't work right with you. So I have 10 overall advice tips for everyone out there for your first things. First, these are considerations. What type of person are you? All right, would you consider yourself a visual learner? And how do you like to work with on the computer? So what I'm trying to get at with this is that this is kind of the tracker classic sequence interface. As I mentioned before, Buzz Tracker, yeah, it's free, but the interface is very minimalistic. You're working with numbers. It doesn't have the graphical style that something like FL Studio has. Depending on the type of person you are, if you're a math person or you're a programmer, a tracker might really work with you. If you're not, something like FL Studio might be a better click. Second, you plan on using hardware in the future? This is something that takes a little bit of thought on your part. And it's actually a very, very tough thing to think about when you're first getting started. You have no idea really how music production is going, yet you have to think about, will I be purchasing hardware synthesizers to add to my studio setup in the future, or will I just be using the computer? What this is important for is, do you need to have recording capabilities in your software that you can grow into, or do you not need those features? So for example, Renoise does not have the recording capabilities that, let's say, Traction does. And that's something you might need to think about if you want to grow into your software and develop a more complex studio around yourself. 3, do you plan to do multi-track recording or recording of that outbound hardware? Now, certain studio software has different features for this. Let's say, for example, FL Studio, it can do some recording, but it's not particularly that good at multi-track recording. That means if you have to record a band, you want to record multiple instruments, a guitar, a singer, whatever, or if you just have multiple synthesizers that are hardware that you need to record at once. Something like Traction or perhaps one of another studio offers might be better for that. Again, the trackers don't really offer that multi-track recording feature because of the way they're set up. What type of music do you plan on creating? This is perhaps one of the biggest things that people overlook regarding the software. In many respects, it depends a lot on the type of software you're using and the type of music that you're going to create. Now, most of the software that I recommend today, these studio environments, are great for electronic music. You can do any of them for electronic music. And that's probably what most of the people listening to this podcast are probably planning on doing, is doing electronic music. But the type of electronic music could be more beneficial from one version to another. So let's say, for example, you produce ambient music. That's not your classic pattern-based or loop-based music as compared to dance music. And that might need to take that into consideration when you're looking at different software studios, because a lot of them are pattern-based, especially the trackers and so forth. That sort of flexibility, depending on what you need, may come into play later on. It also depends on, do you plan to do a lot of work with samples or synthesizers? So think about what type of music you like to listen to and perhaps what you might like to produce. Let's say, for example, you want to do remixes or mashups. Those are very, very popular these days, and you might want to get into that, and there's a lot of artists who are doing that. If that is the case, you might want to consider some software packages over others. Let's say, for example, Sony's Acid Pro software or Ableton Live, might be better if you want to plan on doing mashups or remix type of software, because those software packages are very, very strong in dealing with loops and loops that can change tempo and mixing down different sorts of loops and wave and samples. How concerned are you with the performance of your computer? Now, this may be a tricky question, but most computers these days can handle a lot of the stuff you throw at it. But if you're really trying to push and do, let's say, sound design, for example, getting a software package like FL Studio that has a very fancy interface, a lot of your system resources are going towards loading that interface. And those resources could perhaps be better used towards the DSP or sound processing capabilities of your computer if you plan to do more complex sound shaping and so forth. Finally, last two considerations that you need to think about is, what is your budget and what is your hardware platform? If you're using Windows, you have a lot of options available to you. If you're using a Mac, you got a lot of commercial options available to you, and that is directly impacted by your budget. But on the other hand, there's not a lot of freeware options available out there as well. So I hope this helped everybody out there a little bit on kind of getting started and what to think about with the software that they might want to get started with. I encourage everyone, head over to a forum somewhere. Serious Sounds is great. We'll help you out there. Talk to people. I'm sure you'll get bombarded with FL Studio recommendations over at Serious Sounds, so that's the popular choice of today. But I encourage everyone to think about what type of music they want to produce before they make their software purchase, and try out a lot of different software to see what different styles fit with you. That's it for this topic of the week. listener emails. This is a section of the show where you guys get to send in emails and questions to me, and hopefully I'll try to get them answered on the show. Now, since this is our first episode, I don't have any listener emails or questions to answer, so what I'm instead going to do is go over a little NAMM roundup. NAMM is the big music conference and convention that happens twice a year in the United States. All the manufacturers from around the country and around the world actually come and show off their latest gear and releases that are going to be released for the next year. But before I get into that, I first want to let everybody know how you can get in contact with us over at Sirius Sounds. Go ahead, sign up, and become a member of the boards. But also, if you just want to send me an email, you can contact me at sup@sirius-sounds.net. And since you're all music producers, I expect you guys should be able to record as well. So if you want, go ahead and send me an MP3 file of your question, and I'll be able to feature your question right on the show here. Ask me anything you want. If you want to make a comment about some topic that I talked about, go ahead and send those in. If you just have a question you might want to get answered, send those in too. So this year at NAMM happened about a month ago, and the big talk about at NAMM this year was mostly DJ equipment. Apparently that was the big thing this year. A lot of companies were featuring DJ equipment, and the big turn this year is the MP3 DJing or laptop DJing. One of the big releases this year that made quite a lot of noise was by M Audio. A few weeks before the NAMM event, M Audio released on their MySpace page a picture of a mysterious new product that was supposed to be released. It had this really dark picture with these really bright and colorful interfaces, and everybody was thinking it was going to be some fantastic new piece of hardware. What M Audio actually ended up releasing instead was a new controller for their Torque DJ software. It was called the Exponent Controller, and a lot of people are actually pretty disappointed with the announcement. This new Torque controller is a full-featured DJ equipment controller for their Torque software. Now, the Torque DJ software itself is supposed to be pretty good. It's got a really nice interface, looks really nice, and it's supposed to act very, very well. This new interface, however, people were very disappointed with for a couple of reasons. A, the price is pretty expensive. It's about $750 for this hardware, which I think is probably a bit much. It's not even in a steel case or anything like that. Granted, it looks pretty good with the multicolored interface. It does have MIDI, so you could use it for just about any MIDI application, but $750 is quite a lot. Also, another big thing, the turn or jog wheels for it are actually located on the top of the machine or towards the top, which means you have to reach your hands over all the knobs and controls to get to the jog wheels, which makes for a potentially uncomfortable situation for DJs out there who want to do different sorts of things. So a lot of people are disappointed with that. On the other hand, we have Vestax releasing the VCI 100, and a lot of people really like this one. It's a very solid DJ-looking piece of equipment. It's all metal. It was beautifully designed. The jog wheels are in the proper place. It's plug-and-play for both Mac OS X and Windows. It comes bundled with Traktor 3LE, and it can be used with just about anything. And the build quality looks fantastic, and it's also a lot cheaper than the M-Audio gear at $500. One of the other big discussions that I heard about NAMM this year was the new drum machine by Roger Lynn and Dave Smith. Now, for those of you who don't know who they are, Dave Smith is pretty much a pioneer in analog synthesizer development. This is all hardware on this part. He has released the Dave Smith Evolver and Polyevolver over the past couple of years, and they're absolutely wonderfully sounding synths. Roger Lynn, on the other hand, he's famous for his Lynn drum machine, and also he's the creator of the MPC. And at NAMM, they released a picture, but no actual hardware, of a new collaboration project between the two of them called the Boom Chick. Now, what is the Boom Chick? It's basically a hybrid MPC with an analog drum machine in it, and a lot of people are really excited about this. It's got the MPC-style pads. It's got the Evolver kind of interface with the analog-sounding synthesizer. It's going to be beautiful, I think, when it finally comes out. Probably going to be pretty expensive, but it's pure analog, and you can't really get much more than that. That's going to be very exciting when people release that and they come out with that in the next year or so. Another big talked about product came from Korg, the R3. The R3 is a replacement for the MicroKorg. Now, the MicroKorg, surprising a lot of people, did extremely, extremely well over the past few years. It's a small little compact synthesizer with micro keys. Has a pretty good sounding synthesizer engine in it that's kind of based off the MicroKorg or the MS-2000 synth engine. Now, the R3 is a full-fledged synthesizer. It steps it up a notch from the MicroKorg. It comes with full-size keys, 37 of them. It's supposed to be a very, very affordable with a great synth engine. It's compact and lightweight. The sound generator uses this multiple modeling technology, which is also kind of the same thing based off the Korg Radius, which is another new synth they released. So it's got quite a broad range of good analog modeling sounds. Now, the synth itself has two oscillators plus a noise generator. It's got eight different sorts of wave types: sawtooth, pulse, triangle, sine, formant, which is kind of vocal noises, noise, DWGS, which I have no idea what that is, and audio in. You can also modulate the waveforms with cross unison and VPM. There's 12 types of effects built into the synth. It's got drive, decimator, hard clip, octave saw, multi-tri, and a whole bunch of other things that basically just mess up the noise. Got some, your standard low-pass, bypass, and high-pass filters. It's got a vocoder, which is another huge effect on it, and it's two times multi-timbral, which means you can have two voices playing at once with eight-voice polyphony. So very exciting synth coming out from them. I got an audio clip on here that I'll play for you. It sounds really, really cool. Another big announcement coming out from NAMM this year comes from Arturia, and it's the release of their Origin. Now, the Origin is the first hardware synthesizer from Arturia. And what it basically is, it takes all their popular software instruments, puts them in a little box, and this thing does all the DSP for the synths in it. Now, what's so cool about the Arturia and the Origin is that Arturia has been very, very popular with their modeled synths that they've done. They've cloned the Moog Modular, the ARP 2600, the Mini Moog, the CS80, and the Prophet VS synths. And from what I hear, the emulations of these things sound extremely close to the originals. Now, the Moog Modular and the ARP 2600, which are both modular synths in and of themselves, are extraordinarily powerful by themselves. What the Origin does, it takes all of these synths, puts it in one, and you can mix and match the modules between the different types. Now, this is something you never could have done with a classic Moog Modular and just ARP 2600. So there's all sorts of sonic possibilities that open up to this. And this is going to be a really, really cool. It's a great looking box with plenty of knobs on it. I know people love the tweak knobs, and it even comes with a color interface. Price is going to be pretty expensive. I think it's probably going to be around $3,000 or $4,000, but for a completely modular synth like this, it's pretty sweet. Here's some of the specs. It's up to 32-voice polyphony, or polyphony, for the English people out there. You can create your own patch using any of the above-mentioned synthesizers that I talked about. 24-bit, 96 kilohertz supported engine. Has all these 500 presets created by synthesis specialists. You can use on Mac or PC, AU or VST plugin. Bravo to Origin on that one. Large selection of effects in addition to the modules. It's got phaser, chorus, delay, reverb, and all those great things. It even comes with its own 16-track, 32-step sequencer, which is pretty interesting. I don't know how many people actually use those, but you know, that's something a lot of people might be interested in. And last thing from our NAMM roundup that was really exciting was Waldorf. Waldorf is a big hardware synth company, not big, but popular. They've made some great, great analog-sounding synths way back in the day. They were made popular by the Q, the Q Plus, and the Microwave synths. A couple years ago, they went out of business. It was really tragic. A lot of people were kind of disappointed that this great German synth company went out of business. Well, it looks like Waldorf is back, and congratulations to them. A lot of people are really excited about this. They're coming back with three new hardware synthesizers in addition to their classic VST Rack Attack drum machine, which was very popular. The first synth that they're talking about is the Stromberg. It's a big aluminum 5-octave wavetable digital synth with optional plug-in modules and analog filters, true analog filters and tube amplification. You're probably going to be able to get some great warm sounds out of this. The next synth they're releasing is called the Biofeld. It's a desktop slash rack mount analog modeling synth with a nice big LCD screen and an aluminum box. And finally, they have the Zarenburg, which I think it's how it's pronounced since it is German. It's a Whirly-inspired stage panel using physical modeling rather than samples. So for people out there who are looking for that kind of unique stage panel sound, kind of like the Klaviyo Electro or something like that, check this thing out. I think a lot of people are excited about that. And then they're also having a limited reissue of the Q, Q Plus, and Micro Q. These are called the Phoenix Editions. They're limited. These were extremely great sounding synths. The Q is analog with digital filters, and the Q Plus is an analog synth with analog filters. And the Micro Q is a simplified rack mount version of the Q. So definitely something to check out for those people out there. I hope you guys enjoyed this NAMM roundup. Next week, hopefully you guys will reply to me with some emails. I'll be able to reply and a few questions and maybe some feedback. And now here we go, moving on next, we got the Artist of the Week. Artist of the Week is an Australian duo that goes by the name of Suspended Animation. Suspended Animation consists of Patrick Hallworth and Meendert Vandeveer. They produce a wide range of progressive-related electronic music, including progressive trance, progressive house, and electro. You can find them on the Sirius Sounds message boards under the names Kid Wicked and Quantinuity. The song they featured this week is by Suspended Animation is entitled Evolution and is a nice mellow progressive trance piece that features lots of good astropad work. You can find more of their work over at their MySpace page, myspace.com/suspendedanimation. And without further ado, here is Suspended Animation with Evolution. Well, that's it for this episode of Serious Sounds Radio. I hope everyone enjoyed it. Stay tuned for next episode, where I'll be talking about MIDI and explaining all about what MIDI is, how to use it, and what are some of the maybe successors to MIDI that are coming out in the future. If you enjoyed this episode, should be sure to check us out over at Dig or at Podcast Pickle. Vote for us. Keep the community growing strong, and hopefully I'll see you over at Serious Sounds. Again, if you want to email me over at the Serious Sounds Radio, the email is soup, S-U-P, at serious-sounds.net.